of stuff that Julian's doing in the other storyline. Julian's just sitting there like a little angel with a halo, and he's like, yeah, Cheryl, don't do bad things.
Meanwhile, he's literally being a smut peddler.
Literally.
Hello and welcome to our Riverdale podcast, brought to you by the Aficionados Podcast Network. My name is Robin Jeffrey. I'm a 28-year-old actor and artist. I like brooding anti-heroes, feminist agendas, and I remember way too many details that no one else cares about. You can follow me personally at Robin E. Jeffrey pretty much everywhere, and our fun fact of this episode is sort of going to be about, like, burlesque, drag, etc. So I can't say I've been to a lot of burlesque shows. The only ones that I've been to, I went to a couple in college, and that's because one of my friends was performing. So yeah, I've been to a couple. I definitely have opinions about what happens this episode. And I've been to a lot of really fun drag shows. Is that what the question was, right? Yeah.
Oh yeah, we are big fans of burlesque and drag in this house.
Yeah, yeah. Seen many a good lip sync regarding.
I would say that Violet Chachki does like straight up burlesque.
Yep, we've seen Violet,
and we did see Violet for. Did we pay for that? I think we did. Yeah, and that yep. was cool as hell.
Mm-hmm. We got to see Violet, Alaska, and Bob in one go in that one ticket.
I am still absolutely devastated that even though Alaska and Bob were on the same thing, they didn't do Not Another Dig.
Yeah.
Live, I was like, you guys have a song together.
That's what? One of the best songs that has ever come from, like, a Rue Girl. Ever. Period.
I completely agree. I genuinely like...
As a Trixie stan, I said it.
You know what? Fair enough. I think yeah. Trixie's cover of Video Games is also up there.
100%. I also love Trixie's cover of Cover Girl, even though I don't think it's available on Spotify. But I saw it when I saw her on tour, and it was amazing.
Oh, I'm so jealous of you. I'm hoping
so good.
Pride is coming up here, and they actually do have... This is completely not on topic. They're doing a huge drag night at the P&E.
Uh-huh.
So it's going to be, like, Trixie, Alaska, Priyanka, like, a lot of really good Rue Girls.
Yonks. That's a good lineup.
But, like, the tickets with fees are $100 each.
Ugh, yeah.
And I was like, I want to go so bad, because that also gets you admission to the P&E. So, like,
right.
So you're going to, like, a fair. So, like, you're riding rides, eating fair food, and watching drag queens perform. But $100 each is just, yeah. Steep. We couldn't justify it. Anyway.
Sorry, who are you?
Yeah, hi. My name is Brittany Ray, and I'm a 33-year-old artist and writer. I like badass moms and long naps. I gotta change that. I can't nap anymore. I'm on Twitter I'm never gonna call it X. I'm on Twitter at Britannia, where I can be found attempting to be interesting, and definitely this week bullying Elon Musk.
Yeah. I feel like, I think you've used that one already.
I know I have, but it's one of my many hobbies. I've also been talking about Good Omens a lot, so that too. Yes. And today we have words to say about episode 7. My burlesque story. So our fun fact is, like, the burlesque / drag shows you've been to. My first burlesque show actually happened right outside this apartment. Do you know the JJ Bean downstairs?
Uh-huh.
That used to be a burlesque place.
Wow. I love that.
And my step-cousin / step-aunt, I don't really know what she is, she came to town when I lived in Vancouver the first time in 2008 and took me to her burlesque show there, and that awakened things in me that I did not care to examine at the time. But the really cool thing is that a couple months after I had been in there and done the burlesque thing, they wound up shooting my absolute favorite TV show in the entire world in the exact same place.
Amazing.
So I got to watch them shoot Battlestar Galactica at a burlesque club, and that was fucking cool. All right. Now we have more to say about episode 16 of Riverdale, Stag.
Yes. And also thanks to Blanche for writing our notes this episode. As always, she is amazing.
And thank you to Blanche for saving my ass last week and filling in for, which turned out to be serendipity because it was an Alice episode.
Yes. And I'm so sad because you also missed this, like, lovely email from Katie about, like, her family and Cuba and Castro and everything. So I've got to forward it to you so that you can see it. It's so good.
Oh, yes, please.
As for Stag, it is a 1997 American thriller film directed by Gavin Wilding, made for HBO and later released theatrically after drawing large ratings. A group of men are having a bachelor party, but when misfortune befalls one of the strippers at the Stag, Meg, a convoluted scheme is hatched by the partygoers to avoid blame.
Oh, so the stripper dies, huh?
Sounds like something men would do.
Yeah, the stripper definitely dies.
Yeah.
Every time a man complains about the Barbie movie and they're like, imagine if the roles were reversed, I was like, oh, you mean all of cinematic history?
Yeah, like everything? Okay.
That's crazy. Imagine if the female's only role in the film was to die.
As for thoughts from listeners, it's me again. I saw on the Riverdale Wiki that Perky and Peach, which is the name of Mary's dress shop, for some reason I did not put this together, but it's a reference to Pretty in Pink, which is a movie that Molly Ringwald was in.
The minute you said Perky and Peach, I was like, oh, duh.
Yeah.
Oops.
Tutor boot, Benny, how you feel?
I really kind of want to give it a boot.
Yeah.
I do recognize that my boot is probably because I personally emotionally didn't enjoy it. I recognize that the structure of the episode is perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. The writing is perfectly fine. But yeah, I didn't enjoy it, so I'm going to give it a boot.
Okay. I'm going to give it a newt. And the reason is that I enjoyed a lot of it. The back, like, 5 to 7 minutes really, really tanked it for me, unfortunately.
Fair enough.
So that's why I'm going to put it in the newt category, because I don't think I can give it a boot, because I did, you know, laugh and smile through most of it. But yeah, that back like quarter of it was rough.
You know what? Maybe I'll give it a newt as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before we get into the conversation, I have put two different links in the description, and I would really appreciate it if you guys would go and check these out. So one of them is like, please do it. The other one is do it if you feel like it. So the do it if you feel like it one. When The 100 ended a couple of years ago, we finished out the whole thing by doing a discussion about the whole thing and then a Q&A. And the questions included things like, what were your favorite show, or like, what were your favorite ships? What were your favorite episodes in general? What were your favorite storylines? Stuff like things about the show. So it can be like serious things about the show. It could be, you know, silly, goofy things about the show. Or it can just be, what is your favorite type of chip? Like, whatever you guys want. I put a thing in the description for the Q&A. If any of you guys want to send in any type of question, you can fill that in, and I'm going to put that in the description of all of the last 5 episodes of the thing, and then around 2 weeks-ish after the finale podcast comes out, then we're going to record our Q&A and our discussion.
I can't believe we did this for 7 years.
I know.
That's insane.
That's insane. So if you guys have any questions, please go ahead and fill that out. The other one is, I really hope you do it. It's literally one mandatory question and then one optional question. Blanche has brought up potentially starting over at the beginning and doing a full spoiler go through of Riverdale. Now, when she brought it up, I said, okay, Brittany's not going to do that.
and you were right.
Yeah. And so Blanche said, I will do it. So basically the question in that survey is just, would you listen to it? It's not going to start for a couple of years, probably. I said it has to be after we finish covering the beginnings of The 100, because I just can't juggle all these things at the same time. So it would start in 2025, maybe a little bit later. The hosts would be me and Blanche, and I guess we're just wondering if anybody would listen to that, and if we have enough listenership, then we potentially would do that. So if you guys would go and answer, it's literally like, yes, no, maybe. And then the second question is like, can you elaborate if you want to? Like, yes, but only if this happens, or no, because, or maybe because, you know? So just getting your guys' opinion would really help me. Even if you're like, no, I'm not going to listen to that, please go and put that opinion in the survey, if you don't mind, because otherwise, if all I'm getting is yeses, then I think that everybody's going to listen to it, right? Yeah. So just please give your opinion. If the answer is no, that's okay. Please just let me know.
Because my answer was no.
I'd really, really appreciate that.
Not because I don't love doing this, but because by the time 2024, 2025 rolls around, I'll be like, I am really done with Riverdale.
Finished with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, just please give your opinion. I'd really, really appreciate that. Let's get into the episode.
Let's see it then.
Let's see it then. All right, so Blanche and I split this into the Jughead storyline, the Shoni storyline, the Archie and Reggie storyline, and then the Betty storyline.
Ah, so two
Veronica
each.
Just sort of gets to hang out in all of these storylines by herself. Or like, she sort of like floats within. So I figured we'd get Jughead over with, and then we would finish with Betty, which are the two storylines that end the worst for me.
And do you want me to do the sexier storyline so that you do not have to read those things?
That'd be perfect!
That's what I thought!
Thanks, Benny!
You got it, man!
I literally was going to be like, you're reading Archie and Reggie. You don't get a choice. Everything else you can choose.
You know what that is? Asexual allyship.
Allies.
Say ally, Valentina.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
All right, so Jughead. Jughead comes into Fieldstone's office and asks why everyone is so down today. Fieldstone reveals that he got a letter from Dr. Werthers that there's a new comic book code he wants to be enforced, to censor them. Werthers also requested a sit-down meeting with him. He's nervous because he has Clifford, Featherhead, and Sister Woodhouse backing him up. Jughead says he has to go to the meeting because he needs to have a chance at defending his profession. Fieldstone says okay, but he wants Jughead to come since he's dealt with them all before. He's like, please, teen, will you please come with me and back me up?
And I'm like, this adult actually made a good decision here.
Yeah, it's true. And I love, like, Fieldstone has been so deeply incompetent up until now. Mm-hmm. And he gets, like, one brownie point this episode. But I almost sort of expected him to be like, oh, Jughead, I don't do work. I just tell you what you need to work on.
I mean, yeah.
That's basically what he's been doing up until now.
Isn't that an executive, though?
I did want to say, like, one of the things that really upset me about this episode is that, like, up until this episode, mm-hmm. I was, like, kind of still excited to see what they were going to do at the end. Like, what's happening here? And by the end of this, I was just sort of like, whatever, just do it.
The end of what?
The end of this episode made me be like, the end of this show, I don't really care. Just do it.
Because there's no direction. It's aimless.
Exactly. Like, they're taking back everything that they're building up towards. I'm just so confused as to what the direction is here. Like, and unfortunately, the Jughead storyline has become so, like, uninteresting to me, just because, like, I know what's gonna happen. It's basically the same thing every time. Werther says, don't do comics. Jughead says, I wanna do comics. And that's it. You know? I'm like, what are we doing here?
I mean, I do think, first of all, I agree definitely up to a point, because mm-hmm. I feel like doing episode by episode, when the show has also done serialized storytelling, mm-hmm. when we're in the final stretch is kind of crazy. Yeah. Like, I'm not trying to be one of those viewers. Actually, I am trying to be one of those viewers who is like, what's the end game here? But what's the end game here?
Yeah. Exactly. Like, yeah.
What is any of this for?
Well, like, this show has been so all over the place for 7 full years. And, like, I understand that that's what this show is for. But I'm also like, but this is the end. You gotta pick something. Like, eventually the show ends, and that's in, like, 4 episodes, and there has to be an ending. So what is the ending? Pick something.
I was telling my wife, Sam, that I think that there's 2 things happening here. One, they just decided to throw every dart at the wall.
Yeah.
Because they wanted to basically have every relationship, like, I think for the fans. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you got your Jeronica, your Veronica, I guess everything but Bughead.
Archie.
Sorry, guys. Basically, they wanted to do every ship. And I'm like, okay, I can kind of see the logic in that. But they also threw it at the wall in a way where there's no cohesive storyline coming together. Right. None of these are serving a narrative purpose other than to both confuse the viewer and then, I guess, to pander a little bit to the supporters of whatever ships those are.
I guess, like, my main, like, complaint... I'm not even, like, mad. So basically, if you guys didn't watch the episode, Jughead and Veronica kiss again at the end of this episode. And I'm, like, not even mad anymore. I'm just confused.
Yeah.
I'm like, but we already did that at the beginning of this season. You know, we pandered to those people at the beginning. Like, what? Why are we doing this again? Because Veronica stopped dating Jughead for a reason, right? Yeah. And now it's like, it just felt like there was no buildup. And like half of my notes are like, oh, I love this because Jughead and Veronica are working together and they like really seem like good friends. And I'm like, I feel like an idiot.
Yeah.
At the end while I was doing my notes, like, so I wrote down, oh, Veronica are so much better as friends. I love this while I was watching. Then I redo my notes the next day and I'm like, I feel stupid.
So this comes to the other part of my complaint / why I think these things are happening. Mm-hmm. All of these scripts basically just had one pass before the writers went on strike.
Yeah. Mm, sure.
Especially these, I think it's these back 4.
Yeah.
The writers could not punch up or do any additional stuff. So like whatever the actors were given, there's no rewriting on set. There's none of that, which usually is very normal when you film. There's rewriting on set. There's, you know, there's actor input. There's all sorts of stuff, which is why the CW, and apparently this was really rare, but the CW always flew up the episode's writer to be on set for when it's filmed. And apparently not a lot of studios do this, but the CW did. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to see in these next few weeks is going to be stuff that could not be altered, changed, or punched up in any way. And I think that's going to be to our detriment as viewers.
Yeah. Right, which shows how valuable the writers are.
100%, because at any given time, I am bullying this show and the writing of this show, but at no point do I think that means that they don't deserve the world. Yeah. Because what are they doing? They're entertaining me.
Mm-hmm. And thank you.
Yeah, but I also have a lot of questions about where this show is supposed to be going and why.
Yeah.
The only good thing that I can see for Jughead's storyline here is it is a great exploration of censorship and how ridiculous it is. And unfortunately, it's really timely.
Right. And it's historical, you know, like this comic code that they're talking about, it existed, you know. So like, that's cool. I just really feel like it's starting to get redundant. I'm just like, OK, I get it. You know, don't do comics. I will do comics. And we've been doing that all season, you know. Yeah.
And I think if this was the first season of Riverdale, it would be great.
Yeah
because you could see that it was building somewhere, and the rest of the show would build up on that foundation of comic censorship and fighting puritanical ideals in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
But for right now, the show's almost over, so it's nothing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, so Jughead goes to Veronica with his comic book predicament. She agrees that what Werther's is proposing is ridiculous. They look over the rules together and learn that he wants to ban comics with horror, bloodlust, depravity, and lust, but is also very vague. Jughead thinks he's trying to target Pep Comics in particular and wants business advice from Veronica. She advises Jug and Fieldstone to make a counterproposal. Great advice. You know, Veronica knows what she's talking about. And, you know, they sort of like smile and he's like, thank you so much for helping me. And I'm like, see, that's so nice that they're just like, I'm just like, can we just have characters be friends?
Well, because, you know, we've proven that they're not great romantically, but they're great working together.
Exactly. Because they're so similar. You know, we learned that about them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they break up for good reason. And now it's like, it really feels like Veronica, I mean, she just kissed Archie for no reason a couple episodes ago. She's just like, anybody she has an opportunity to kiss, she just takes it. And like, that feels weird.
And I'm like, what happened to Veronica? What happened to Betty?
It's annoying.
I thought that was a declaration of something.
Right.
We'll talk about that later.
Like, they still haven't actually kissed IRL.
I am going to...
What the heck?
Be upset.
Okay, big one. So, Jughead and Fieldstone meet with Werther's, Featherhead, Clifford Blossom, and Sister Woodhouse. Jughead reads that comics with walking dead / torture, vampire / vampirism, ghoul / cannibalism, and werewolfism are not allowed. Fieldstone reads that suggestive and salacious illustrations or suggestive postures is unacceptable. They argue about how vague the conditions are. Jughead then brings up another point that says all scenes of horror, depravity, lust, etc. are also banned. He says that this code goes against the First Amendment. They don't think that content like this should really be protected by freedom of speech. Fieldstone says that this is blatant censorship. It's intentionally vague and confusing so they can apply it to anything they want. Great point from Fieldstone. Jughead brings up their counterproposal, a rating system that's printed on all of their covers. But Werther said that will just make people want to read the ones marked as adult even more. They say they're trying to protect people from these perverted comics and argue that if they read them, it'll prompt the same behavior shown in them. Jughead says the Bible and Shakespeare have all their banned themes in them too.
Yep.
But Clifford says that wrongdoers are punished in the Bible. Jug tells him to point out even one comic of theirs that glamorizes violence, but Clifford says they haven't even read them! Werther's kicks them out and says that this meeting was never an actual negotiation, just a courtesy. Pep is the only comic company that hasn't complied to them, and if they don't do that, they won't be allowed to print the comic book code seal of approval on their covers, and nobody will sell them anymore.
So, what I suspect is that Jughead and Featherstone are going to be going to the other comic publishers and all agreeing to do the comic code instead.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm guessing this will just basically wrap up like.
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
Oh, you mean like, yeah. Oh, Fieldstone? Like, Jughead and Fieldstone are going to go to the other people and be like...
Oh, Fieldstone. Yes. Featherhead and Fieldstone.
I was like, is that Featherhead and Fieldstone's ship name?
Fighting for my f***ing life right now.
Yeah, okay, so, sorry, what did you say? They're going to go to the other comics and they're all going to band together and go against Werther's?
Yes, basically all agreeing to the comic code instead of being censored, which I guess would then, of course, lead to the foundation of the Archie comics, right? So.
Right. Ooh, that would be cool.
Yeah.
I love the moment where Jughead's like, he's like, shouldn't you be in class? Like, he's like, please, you're a better debater than this Fieldstone guy and I don't want you to be here. And Jughead's like, it's actually my lunch period, you goon.
I love how much Jughead sticks in his craw.
Absolutely.
He's like, these horrible rebellious teenagers are making me look stupid.
So we have Featherhead and we have Jughead. We've got the two heads going head to head.
Too many heads.
Too many heads.
Put some back.
So I think Fieldstone gets like a little bit of a brownie point this scene.
He does.
Like, I think Fieldstone is so incompetent, but he shows up and he has good points, I feel like.
He can be a little confused, but have the spirit.
Yeah. I also noticed, you know, they're like, we need to protect the kids. But when they're hurting the kids, it doesn't matter.
Of course not, because state-sanctioned church violence is fine. And that's the world we currently live in.
And Clifford literally admits that they don't even read the comics, so they don't even know what they're fighting against. They're just looking at the pictures.
Literally? It's a poorly thinly veiled like allegory for the drag bands, and I really love it for doing it. Because none of you have been to a drag show. None of you know that adult drag shows are not for kids. And by insisting that you blanket ban everything, you're protecting children instead of letting parents and kids make informed decisions based on a rating system. It's almost frustratingly prescient.
Yes. So I did some research on the CCA, which is the Comics Code Authority. And they're saying like the whole country, you're like not allowed to do whatever. And I'm like, that's not even true. If this is the CCA. So here's the information I got about the CCA. The Comics Code Authority was formed in 1954 by the Comics Magazine Association of America as an alternative to government regulation. The CCA enabled comic publishers to self-regulate the content of comic books in the United States. The code was voluntary, as there was no law requiring its use, although some advertisers and retailers looked to it for reassurance. Some publishers, included Dell, Western, and Classics Illustrated, never used it. Its code, commonly called the Comics Code, lasted until the early 21st century. The CC formation followed a moral panic centered around a series of Senate hearings and the publication of psychiatrist Frederick Wortham's book, Seduction of the Innocent. So that's literally who Werther's is.
Yeah.
Members submitted comics to the CCA, which screened them for adherence to its code, then authorized the use of their seal on the cover if the book was found to be in compliance. At the height of its influence, it was a de facto censor for the entire U.S. comic book industry. By the early 2000s, publishers bypassed the CCA and Marvel Comics abandoned it in 2001. By 2010, only three major publishers still adhered to it: DC Comics, Archie Comics, and Bongo Comics. Bongo broke with the CCA in 2010, DC and Archie followed in January of 2011, rendering the code completely defunct.
So that's definitely what we're heading towards to see the formation of.
Yeah. Yes. Blanche had the coolest note ever. So I love that Blanche reads the comics. I think that that is like so helpful. And she says, these themes that they're bringing up are all the Archie horror novel themes. So The Walking Dead and Torture, that's Afterlife with Archie. Vampires and Vampirism is Vampironica. Ghouls and Cannibalism is Blossom 666. And Werewolfism is Jughead the Hunger. Very cool.
Oh my god, that's so cool.
Yeah. Blanche also said, also, I'm so sorry, but I just do not care about Fieldstone. Obviously, I'm on his side here, but wouldn't this plot be a million times more meaningful if one of Jughead's parents was involved? You can convince me that Gladys wouldn't be more fun than any of the random adults that have been dragged into Jug plots this season.
Yeah, we do get stuck with the most boring adults possible, huh?
It is true.
Yeah.
All right, last scene. At the Pembroke, Ronnie asks Jughead what happened with Werther's & Co. Jughead explains that if they can't get the comic book code seal of approval, they're basically out of business. Jughead is disappointed in himself for being naive, but Veronica disagrees and says he's brave for standing up for what's right. She says they'll figure something out, and then they flirt a little and kiss.
Okay, we got about halfway into this scene, and by we, I mean me, and then I knew what happened, so I just stopped watching it.
Great.
Because I was like, I don't really care to see this. If you do ship this, genuinely happy for you, because, like, who doesn't want to see, you know, this if you ship it? I personally don't, so I was like, I'm good, because I was kind of under the impression that Veronica was going to be a thing.
Like, that's what they told us, though, so, like, it, you know... It's not like, you're not in the wrong for thinking that, because that's literally what they told us.
So this takes me back to the queer baiting discussion.
Yeah.
Because I still personally would classify what just happened with Veronica as queer baiting.
Mm-hmm. If they're not going to do it, yeah.
Well, it's not even if they're not going to do it. If you, because like literally, I'm trying so hard not to talk about Good Omens all the time, but it literally is relevant.
Okay.
I avoided watching Good Omens because I thought it was going to be like a Sherlock thing where like you can see the obvious chemistry. You can also, there's people, characters in the story who comment on, oh, you two are in love. But of course, when you say that to the creators, they call you stupid, right? And so they'll hinge the popularity of it always hinges on queer people watching and then getting Lucy in the football every single time, but in the vain hope that one time Lucy won't pull the football away.
Yeah.
So I didn't watch Good Omens for a really long time because I thought it was going to be like that. And of course, season two came out yesterday, and I won't give out too much spoilers, but it's very much not that. It's very much overtly queer. And there are things that happen that push the two characters apart, but at no point do you feel disrespected as a viewer or baited because things don't go the way you thought they were, because they're also sitting there holding your hand and telling you, you're not crazy, this is real, and we do intend to follow up on it. You come back and sit at Riverdale, and it's the writer saying, that never happened. Mm-hmm. What do you mean Betty and Veronica had that whole thing? We're not going to acknowledge that ever again.
The thing is that, like, I would believe this if the Betty and Veronica thing had been more one-sided. You know, yep. They had made it seem like it was just Betty. But it wasn't. It was also Veronica. So I'm, like, really confused about that. And the other thing that annoys me is that, like, it's not even one-sided with Jughead and Veronica either. Like, Jughead starts it. He's just like, are you flirting with me because you said we instead of just me? Or whatever. And I'm just like, what is happening?
This is why I genuinely think it's queer baiting, because you can have your cake, but you are not allowed to eat it. We are going to take it away.
Yeah. And you can have a lick of the frosting, but that's it.
100%. And if you think that we are going to acknowledge it again, we're going to acknowledge it again, you're wrong. Mm-hmm. That's queer baiting.
I wrote down when this scene started, when I was watching live, I wrote down as a joke, haha, please don't kiss on this couch again, because this is the exact same couch, this is the exact same place where it happened last time, and I said, don't do that, haha. And then I was like, what? What is this?
It's also the same couch where we had the Veronica confession.
Right. I'm just like, what is this show doing? I'm just like, what did he do to make you like him again, though?
What does he have that Betty doesn't have?
Right. Exactly. Nothing. And also, like, she talked to him about Jughead, like, with, like, I think Clay being like, oh yeah, he was, like, weird and, like, you know, because after he, like, showed up with Tabitha and they went to the movies, she was just like, oh yeah, that guy was weird, I kissed him once, or, like, whatever, right? I'm just like, so why are we doing this again? And, like, also, what about Tabitha? So weird.
What about Tabitha?
Oh my gosh, Ethel's gonna be heartbroken.
Oh. Ethel, you had to know, babe.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, I do feel bad for Ethel.
Yeah.
That, I'm so confused. Mm-hmm. I'm confused and I'm honestly disappointed, because remember how excited I was after the Veronica stuff? And I was like, I think they're actually going to do it. Maybe it'll be Endgame. And now I'm like, I was half right in that there will be no Endgame, like, for Archie. Mm-hmm. But I think the thing is, there's not going to be Endgame for anyone.
Yeah. I made my fan edit during the hiatus, and I was like, oh man, I hope I'm not, like, missing out on a bunch of Veronica content in the last couple episodes. Don't worry, I'm not.
It doesn't exist. Now, did we have them discover that they were both queer and had queer feelings, and then did we completely ignore that? Yeah. And may I just say, as a queer viewer, fuck you. That was wrong. That was so deeply wrong what they did. And, like, it's because female queer relationships are not taken as seriously as male queer relationships. Mm-hmm. And the only place where that seems to be exception is Shoni, and thank God.
Yeah, at least there's that.
Yeah, I am mad.
And speaking of Shoni?
Speaking of Shoni.
Shall we?
So, Shoni. Lizzo, Cheryl, and Tony are looking at magazines, admiring the women in them. Lizzo pulls out an underground lesbian pinup magazine, and Cheryl and Tony are immediately intrigued. The bell rings, and Lizzo says they can keep it, because she always buys two copies, but warns them not to get caught with it.
Yes. So they've talked a little bit about Betty Page already, with Veronica and, like, the lingerie scene they did earlier this season. Mm-hmm. But Veronica's look in the comics is based off of her, and we see a lot of Betty Page in Veronica's look right now, which I think is really funny, because, like, I feel like Veronica's the type of person to be like, what? No, it's the Veronica Lodge look! But I'm like, babe, your hair looks exactly like hers.
It's exactly Betty Page.
Yeah. So the magazine is called Femme and In.
Oh, I like that.
So I tried to see if maybe that was a reference to a magazine already. I don't know. I'm not very good at Googling that sort of thing, because it's like, you Google the, like, if I Googled Skit Scat, they'd be like, yeah, that's Kit Kat. But if I Google Femme and In, you know, Google is just like, oh, you're looking for
the word feminine.
A parody magazine from the 50s. Like, the Google doesn't know what I'm talking about. And since I don't know what it's called yet, it's hard for me to look it up.
Yeah, fair
enough. I thought maybe it had something to do with, like, Femme and Out, because, like, coming out of the closet, but it also makes sense that it's femme and in because it's like in fashion.
And feminine, like.
And feminine. Oh, that makes way more sense.
I was like, surely she's figured this out.
Maybe that's just what it was. Maybe they just made up that magazine. I don't know if it was real or not. I don't know. I hate Lizzo, but I totally respect being like, yeah, I buy two copies.
Yeah. She's like, I'm just trying to spread the gospel of gay to everyone. Good for you, babe.
And she goes, just don't get caught. And I'm like, oh, they're going to get caught. And
100%.
Spoiler alert, they do.
I mean, they're not very good at being sneaky.
No. There was like several times where I was like, hey, that's a bad idea. You're going to get caught. But they did it anyway.
Well, I think it's because partially they're just so tired of being in the closet.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I get it. I also hated being in the closet.
I'm lucky because I figured out that I didn't know I was in the closet. And then once I figured out I was in a closet, I was like, let me out of here. And I got out.
I love that for you. I knew I was in the closet, but I kept myself in there because I didn't want to accept that about myself.
Mm-hmm.
So we all have our own self-imposed struggles, you know?
It worked out in the end.
Oh, yeah. Cheryl and Tony are at the dark room looking at their new magazine. Tony suggests they do their own pinup photo shoot since she has a camera with a timer on it and they're both hot. I agree. You're also both teenagers.
Correct.
And yeah, this is probably what teenagers do, but portraying them like this is all right. Cheryl says that afterwards they could pick a favorite photo and she could turn it into a pulp novel-esque painting. She says they can do it in the Thornhill Chapel since nobody uses it. I kind of love that part.
Very funny to do it in the chapel, but I was also like, paint it? Your mom is not going to like that. And once again, I was right.
She didn't even try and hide.
No, I was like, it's not even covered. Like,
no.
Dude.
I mean, bless their hearts. They're just so tired.
Yeah.
I did think it was kind of weird to do this storyline with teenagers. I do understand that, like, obviously, as a teenager, I was always curious about this sort of thing. But I was like, but all right. I don't know what else there is to say about it.
Yeah. I continue to think that it's slightly irresponsible to show teenagers doing these things, not necessarily because teenagers don't do them, but because, like, if I watched this as a teenager, I'd start to think I was weird because I wasn't doing this sort of stuff.
Well, because the only balance against it is the character of Alice, and no one's going to listen to Alice. She's a f***ing prude.
And nobody likes her.
Exactly.
Except for us, but it's for other reasons.
I think there's a difference between this and, like, a show like Sex Education, where, like, it does, it shows you every side of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know. I'm just going to go with it at this point, because there's only so many times that I object to something that I can't change.
Whatever.
So, Cheryl and Tony take a bunch of sexy photos in the Thornhill Chapel. I love blasphemy.
Blanche said, was this not the Thistle House Chapel where dead Jason and doll Julian used to live? And I'm like, yeah, probably.
It definitely is. Oh my god, I forgot about dead Jason.
It's an old camera, obviously. And so I was like, did they have to get up and reset the timer every time? Because I feel like that's such an ick.
Oh, probably.
It would be so awkward every single time.
You're like, okay, and we got this pose, and okay, reset back to one. Don't move. Freeze. So Tony develops the photos of her and Cheryl.
And she's like, I was like, where is this dark room? Is it at school? And I realized, hey, that's probably why they call that restaurant the dark room.
Oh my god.
I see what happened there.
Duh.
But I was also like, it's very giving Jonathan Byers, though. It's very, I'm developing photos at school that I shouldn't have taken.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Secret photos that nobody should know about except for me.
Well, at least both people consented to being in the photos.
Correct. Jonathan. I was about to say, I was like, you know what? At least there's that.
Yeah. I like every Jonathan. Time Jonathan comes up, I think about that and I'm like,
Jonathan,
I'm uncomfortable. Okay. Mm-hmm. Cheryl and Tony look at all their scandalous photos in broad daylight in front of the school.
Insane.
Tony says that the magazine they were inspired by publishes amateur photos. You're underage. Cheryl says that maybe after they graduate, but she has picked a favorite of their pictures and wants to paint it. Tony says that it's her favorite photo too, and she can't wait to see Cheryl's painting. This part I actually really love.
Yeah.
Like, choosing their own favorites and turning it into, like, a little art piece, I think it's just really sweet.
Yeah, that's definitely sweet. I was like, hey, don't bring those to school. But I was like, wait, that's where she developed them, so I guess she, like, already had them, I guess?
Yeah.
But I was also like, yeah, it seems super illegal to give these to a magazine when you're both underage. Like, I'm just like,
it is illegal. Yeah.
Is that by definition child pornography?
Yes.
Like, I don't know, guys. At least Cheryl's like, maybe after we graduate. And I was like, wait, maybe after you graduate, as in we'll take new pictures after we graduate and send them in, or we'll send these pictures in after we graduate? Because I still don't think that's good.
It's I'm not familiar with the laws at the time, but yeah,
me neither.
My goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So Cheryl paints a portrait of the photo that she and Tony chose as their favorite.
I feel so smart because I was constantly writing my notes while I was watching live, and I was like, Cheryl, what are you going to do when your mom finds this painting? And I just feel like a genius.
Like, what are you going to do when you inevitably get caught?
The Jughead and Veronica thing made me feel like a fool, but this made me feel so smart.
Good.
At least there's that.
You had half media literacy.
Uh-huh.
But in your defense, it's hard to have media literacy in a show that has no literacy.
Correct.
Thank you. In the middle of the song that Polly, Betty, and Alice are singing in the other storyline, we cut to Penelope finding Cheryl's portrait of her and Tony. She looks horrified.
Cheryl, what do you think was going to happen, man?
I mean...
Like I said, she didn't even cover it up.
No.
And she said that her family doesn't go into the chapel. But it is their house, and at any given time, they could go into the chapel, like Penelope did.
100%.
Right? So you still gotta hide it a little bit.
You gotta... I think it's that Cheryl got too comfortable.
Yeah, too cocky.
Yeah. And, like, it sucks because, in a just world, she wouldn't have to think about these things at all.
Right. But we don't live in a just world.
Yeah. And, I mean... I am at no way going to defend Penelope because, you know, screw
right.
her. But I think it would be normal for any parent upon finding their child painting they and someone else in lingerie. It's a little alarming.
Absolutely. That is such a good point. And it's not even necessarily like, it's anybody, not even like a gay thing.
No. Yeah.
If I saw that with any, I'd be like, hey, what? And like, my brain sort of went like, oh no, Penelope also might have thought that this was like, just came from Cheryl's brain, that she's like so in love with Tony that she did, but she found all the pictures and ripped them up, right? So she knows that they did actually do that also, not even just that Cheryl imagined it.
Oof. And I'm like, Penelope, what if you also discovered that you are queer and you left your husband and everything was fine?
Penelope, we know you are.
A girl can dream.
I've seen the Midnight Club.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
I know what you are, and it's a freaking fruit.
No. Tell them. Tell them the truth.
Cheryl walks into the chapel to find her painting slash and her and Tony's photos all over the floor. She makes her way to the breakfast table, and Penelope taunts her that if something's wrong, she should go think about it in the chapel.
Maybe pray to God.
Right, maybe pray on it. And I'm like, sit on a railroad spike.
The type of stuff that Julian's doing in the other storyline, Julian's just sitting there like a little angel with a halo, and he's like, yeah, Cheryl, don't do bad things.
Meanwhile, he's literally being a smut peddler.
Literally.
I'm like, okay, yeah, Cheryl's doing sapphic things, but hello? At some point, your son acquired gay porn.
I want to stand up for myself a little bit because I feel like I'm constantly like, this terrible male white character who does bad things, I love him. Bring him back. He's great.
Mm-hmm.
But I love Julian, and that's because all of these dudes are constantly showing up and knowing what their character is and knowing what show they're on and having fun with it, and they're fun to watch.
Oh yeah, there's definitely a difference between supporting the character's actions and just enjoying an actor eating this, like, chewing the scenery.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, like, Julian as a character, but also endlessly entertaining to watch.
Absolutely, absolutely. I know, that's why every time I see Brett, I'm like, Brett! Brett, horrible person.
But Brett's actor exactly knows what show he's on and is having the time of his life.
Yeah.
Cheryl asks Tony if she still has the negatives from their photo shoot. Tony says yes and asks why. Cheryl says she wants to shut her parents down once and for all. I don't know what that means.
I was about to be like, I have no idea what the plan is, but okay. Oh boy, oh boy.
I'm hoping it's not submitting the photos to the magazine.
Oh boy. Me too. I agree.
But we'll see.
Great.
I mean, whatever it is, it's kind of nice to know that we've got the Shoney endgame infinitely secured.
Oh yeah, it's definitely in the bag.
Yeah. Sure.
Before we go into Archie, let me talk to you guys about Patreon real quick. It's a service in which you can donate to some of your favorite creators. Ours is patreon.com/theafficionados. We take monthly donations over there. The $1 level is early access. $2 is our Discord server. $5 is 10% off at 3 different small businesses. And the $10 level is our Patreon-only podcast. We'd really appreciate your help over there if you have the means. If not, maybe you could check out some of those small businesses. They're all in the description. Or recommend us to a friend because it's free. And remember, if you're down there in the description anyway, I'd really appreciate it if you guys would go and fill in our Q&A if you feel so inclined and answer that survey question. Thanks.
Thank y'all.
Archie. Oh boy.
Here's the thing about the Archie story. Is it inappropriate that it's underage? Yes. Do I feel like it's less exploitive somehow because I also get to see Archie discover that he's bisexual.
100%. I'm like, wait, there's no way that we have, that this is, like, I'm just not sure how to read this in a straight way. I just don't know.
Yeah, the problem is with this show, they could go back on it at any time.
Sometimes we're reaching, but this episode, we just aren't.
Yeah.
You know?
In this episode, we have been vindicated.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like I keep saying, hey, if you're queer in the 50s, you've been queer the whole time.
Yeah.
I can't believe I'm right.
It feels good to know that we are securing, at the very least, Archie isn't straight.
Archie and Mad Dog Cannon. I knew it. Archie was in love with Jackson. I've been saying it. Wow. Look at me.
We did it. Oh my god, I totally forgot Jackson.
Yeah. Dude, I still have, like, gifs of Archie, like, looking at that guy with heart eyes.
KJ, what are you doing?
Archie knew. KJ knew this whole time.
KJ did know this whole time. KJ played it like a fruit the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
He really did.
Miss Grundy teaches a writer's workshop to Clay, Betty, and Archie. They discuss Howl by Allen Ginsberg and his involvement in beat poetry. Archie asks what a beat poet is, and Clay interrupts Miss Grundy. Drives me insane. He does it so many times, I want him to shut up sometimes. Clay explains that they're rebel writers who reject materialism, conformity, and heteronormativity. Archie doesn't know what that last word means, and I don't think he could spell it either.
Nope. I wrote in my thing that I was like, it is so unrealistic that Archie just says it back first try properly. I'm like, no, you don't know how to pronounce that word.
He's like, actually... I actually already knew what that word meant, and I just pretended not to because I've been taking those Am I Gay quizzes on BuzzFeed just to make sure I'm not gay.
That's canon, because there's no other way that he said that right.
Clay tells Archie that the Beats have sex with each other sometimes, even though they have girlfriends. Betty seems into this, but Archie's a little shook since he had never considered that as an option. Okie dokie.
I, like, went into this episode being like, you know what's really cool? They showed us Grundy a couple episodes ago, and we just straight up haven't seen her. I think that's kind of cool. That they're just, like, they're proving to us that it doesn't mean anything. And then, first seeing this episode, they said Grundy, and I said, okay.
Here we go again.
And here's the thing, is that, like, you know, they continue to keep having her talk about her husband. Like, we get it. Oh my god. She, like, won't shut up about this husband.
I'm like, is he real?
Because they're like, it's platonic!
Is he real?
I don't know.
I'm starting to think that he's not real.
She's talking about him a lot. And she's talking about him a lot. Yeah. And also, like, if it's so platonic, then why does Archie keep making prolonged eye contact with her?
I think that's just KJ.
Maybe. I don't know. Archie was weird this episode, but I was like, Archie, calm down.
I think it's because Archie's real. I mean, I do think part of it can be attributed to the fact that he can't believe that the school is sanctioning them being able to do this.
Right, yeah. I bet that Grundy doesn't have, there's no way Featherhead knows what they're actually talking about in this writer's workshop. Grundy just said, can I do a writer's workshop? And they said yes.
Exactly. Because, I mean, Archie does say, like, are we going to be allowed to keep studying this?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
So I do think there's a level of, like, surprise here.
Yeah. It was very funny that, like, I can't remember who it was. It was probably Clay. But Clay and Betty were both, like, talking about sex in front of Grundy. And Archie, like, looks at Grundy like, oh my god.
Is this allowed?
You guys don't talk about that in front of a teacher. What? You guys.
Whereas, like, they both know that Grundy's already cool with it.
Yeah, oh, for sure. And Archie's, like, sitting there, like, so uncomfortable. I agree that Clay was, like, I'm just like, who's the teacher, Clay, though? Like, dude, he's constantly, like, at any given time in, like, an educational setting, he's just like, I know more than everybody else here.
Oh, he's mansplaining.
I'm like, okay, bud.
He's such a mansplainer. It drives me insane.
And then at the end, Archie, like, sniffs the paper. I don't know why.
Wait, does he?
Yes, like, Betty puts it up to her face, like, in an excited way. Like, you know when you're excited and you kind of, like, hide your face with the paper?
Yeah.
And Archie, for some reason, just straight up sniffs it. There's no way he's not sniffing it.
He's like, can I catch some gay off of this?
Yeah, he's like, am I so excited about poetry that I'm smelling the poetry? Or does he just want to smell Grundy's perfume on it? I don't know.
I'm gonna go ahead and yeah, you put that sentence right back in your mouth.
Sorry.
Not cool. Yeah, thank you. My god. The disgust that I just felt.
Sorry. Might be.
I do also really think that it's cool that they are studying beat poets and that the teenagers are being introduced to the fact that, like, hey, it can actually be really normal to be, like, fluid and queer and to have this different lifestyle, and it's not bad because it's different. It's just different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because human society also used to be like that before the church came in.
Mm-hmm.
In the boys' locker room, Julian makes an announcement that he got his hands on a stag film from a buddy of his at Stonewall Prep. Archie doesn't know what that means either, so Julian explains that it's a porno. He asks if they all want to come over tonight and watch it. He asks gay Kevin and Clay if he can borrow a projector from the movies. Clay starts to decline, but Kevin interrupts and says that they want to come. Julian says not to expect another one of their wrestling movies. Archie and Reggie also say they want to go. So does everyone just know that they watch gay porn together? What?
I guess so. Like, it sounds like later when Archie is like, did Julian say that Kevin and Clay watch these? Like, it sounds like just Julian knew about it or something? Or, like, maybe Julian's making just a very accurate guess, like Chick did that one time in season two.
Oh, yeah.
When he said that Betty wears the wig to have sex with Jughead.
Yeah.
I love that scene. So funny.
I can't believe that was season two.
I know. Crazy. Blanche was like, do we think that the guy who gave him the film was Brett? And I was like, 100% it's Brett. Because that's literally what he did in season four. Like, in season four, his whole thing was that he had videos of people.
Oh, that's right.
And he got in trouble for it.
Right.
Like, it's literally Brett.
It's definitely Brett.
There's no way it's not. No way it's not.
Oh, that creep.
He's giving him these things. Yeah.
And of course, Brett would have the one remaining copy of Polly's sex tape.
Yeah, yeah. Blanche said, Julian/Brett endgame? Why were they lending each other wrestling movies?
I'm gonna allow this.
I don't think Julian's actually seen it, but he must have it. Like, I wonder if Julian... Wait! Interesting. So Julian... I don't know if Julian watched it, but I wonder if he asked for one from Brett to do his prank. But that means that Brett had one.
Oh, yeah, because he has to get his hands on one.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
The logistics here.
I know you watched it. I know you felt things.
I have a secret headcanon that Brett had a crush on Archie the entire time. I'm just saying.
That's not even a secret headcanon, man.
Right? Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's just my headcanon.
Yeah.
But everybody wants to watch it, and which is, like, fine. But the thing that I cannot believe is that everybody wants to watch it...
Together.
In the same room?
Yeah.
With each other?
Yeah.
That's the thing that really is very confusing to me.
Because, like, as a teenager, if you are not ace...
Yeah.
Those things are a huge source of curiosity.
Absolutely.
But you could not pay me to watch it in a room with other people because of what...
With other people?
What you feel when you watch those things.
And when they go in there, they're sitting so close together. I'm like, it's a big theater. Spread out! What are you doing?
I feel like probably part of the comedy is that they, like, decided to watch it together having, like, no clue what it would actually do.
Right. And, like, the thing is that, like, later, when Archie and Reggie are, like, doing it, they're like, well, I'm upset because I have a boner. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
That made me laugh my ass off.
This storyline was so crazy.
You're like, what do you do? What do we do? I'm horny. What do we do? I'm like, what am I watching?
What is happening right now?
I mean,
I don't.
I guess it's kind of neat to see characters, like, so open about, like, how they feel.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay.
Sure.
Sure.
All I know is that it's funny.
It is funny.
And I think it's meant to be funny, but yeah.
Yes, it is. Right, and it's played funny. Charles and KJ do straight comedy, and I appreciate that. You know, it would have made me really uncomfortable if they had taken it seriously like yes. that, you know?
And also, like, of course there is a precedent for group watching porn, because that used to be, like, something that happened, especially in the 70s and 80s. They would have, like, mm-hmm. you know, porn theaters.
It's nice that they are so honest with each other.
I just would not do it. Do you know what I mean? No. I would know. No. But I guess if that's your only option.
Well, I'm just like, why can't we all pass around the projector and then everybody can have it for one night? But then even then, everyone knows what happened to each other, though.
Yeah.
You know, I just like, just no all around for me.
Yeah.
It's a no for me, dog.
It you're allowed to pass on it.
Yeah, thanks.
No problem.
Boot.
In the Betty storyline, all of the guys show up to the movie theater just for Betty to turn off the film because the leading lady is played by her sister.
Yes.
Julian walks into the locker room the next day and says that, yeah, last night was a bust, but he got Kevin and Clay to lend him a projector. He says he used it to watch another stag film from his Stonewall friend. And was it just the gay one?
Well, that's the thing, is that he I don't know if he actually watched another one or not, but I don't think he watched the wrestling one.
Yeah.
I think that he either didn't watch one and just said that he did and is going to give this one, or he has the one that he gave them at the end with the threesome.
Yeah.
And he watched that one.
Oh, that's possible.
And then gave them the gay one. Yeah.
So he is now renting the projector and the film out for $2. He'll lend Archie and Reggie both the projector and the movie, and they look excited about it because they're going to watch porn together, and that's really normal for two straight dudes.
I do have to say, it's like less weird for me that Archie and Reggie are doing it in Archie's garage.
Yeah, I don't find that.
It's less weird than a whole theater of people.
I don't find that weird at all. I do find it weird that, again, we're watching teenagers do these things, but.
Yes, correct.
Again, there's only so many times I can launch a complaint about something that I cannot change. But yeah, I do think it's less weird for them to do it together. And maybe that's just because we link them in our brains romantically.
Yeah. At any given time, I don't want to see Uncle Frank. But I also think it would have been funny if he had barged in. Saw them
watching gay porn.
Saw them watching the wrestling movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm also just like, if Hal and Frank somehow have some weird linked thing that they can like tell when Betty and Archie are stripping in front of a window together, that Frank should have been able to tell that Archie was doing weird stuff in the garage.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Archie's a dude.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
we trust him.
And he's not doing anything with a girl. And I'm guessing that Frank would say that it's healthy, red-blooded male behavior to watch porn.
He would have shown up and been like, hey, it's good that you're working on your wrestling moves since you left the basketball team.
Exactly.
Good. Another sport. Bye.
Like, I suspect that Uncle Frank probably would have been fine with it, which.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So Archie and Reggie set up the projector in the garage and prepare to watch porn together. They start watching it, but so far the movie is only showing two men. Archie is confused, but Reggie thinks they might fight over a girl or something. But then the men start sensually touching each other and wrestling. They realize this must be one of those videos that Kevin and Clay want to watch, so everyone knows. They agree that they should probably turn it off, but they hesitate. They want to see how it plays out. You know, like, just in case a girl comes in. Not because they're gay or anything.
No.
Well,
that happened.
So Archie and Reggie watched gay porn together, and, yep.
I realized, like, I was like, oh, I have a couple notes about this scene, but, like, two of them are just two funny things that Archie and Reggie said. And then the other one is me laughing that I'm sorry, but this was a good prank. It was, like, funny and also harmless.
I mean, it's a little homophobic.
That is true.
Yeah.
But nobody got, like, hurt.
That's true. They weren't embarrassed publicly, which I guess is the best you could hope for from a prank.
Yeah, yeah. And then they just keep watching it.
Yeah, the thing is that they keep watching it. They watched the whole thing, and I know that awakened something in them that will never go away.
They probably watched it twice.
Oh, probably. Like, maybe if we watch it again, a girl will come in this time.
Yeah. Oh, you know? Probably if we watch it again. I think that it's, like, one of those bonus feature things.
Yeah.
Like, you watch it four times, and then it's different.
Yeah. It'll be different that time, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Reggie and Archie lie in bed separately. Reggie asks Archie if he thinks the guys in the movie were that way. Archie says that some guys are that way. They speculate that Kevin is gay and Clay too. Archie says that there's also an in-between and that a lot of people explore their sexualities. Bisexual. He's bisexual.
Aww.
He brings up Grundy's writer's workshop and tells Reggie about the beat poets sometimes explore each other's bodies even though they have girlfriends. Reggie is shook by this info and gets up to take a cold shower. Archie says him too, but then clarifies that he means after Reggie, of course.
I love that part. We're not going to shower at the same time, obviously. I didn't say I was going to do that. I meant, like, I would go after you. You just let me know when you're done, okay? How do you feel about gotta be canon? Canon bisexual Archie.
I feel really good about it. The only thing that kind of gives me pause is that I'm a little bit worried at the implications of they have girlfriends, but they also sleep with men, and, like, sort of the...
Sure.
The very odd and classic bisexual trope of the queer part of being bisexual isn't serious. It's just something to be, like, experimented with.
Sure. Yeah, that's fair.
But I also feel really good about it because I feel like Archie is absolutely bisexual.
Oh, 100%. He's like, wait, those are the weird feelings I've been feeling?
Like, he didn't know that was an option.
Yeah.
And now he does.
Well, like, that's important, right? Like, I didn't know asexuality was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
As I was growing up, and then as soon as I learned what it was, I was like, oh, that's me. So, like, that's literally what Archie's doing.
Right, because learning about queer things doesn't make you queer, but it sure does help queer people understand themselves faster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly, right. And, like, people are like, well, who needs to label? Who always needs to label? And I'm like, you don't have to label yourself, but it's important that the labels exist so that people can feel like they're part of something.
Well, and also so that they understand.
And feel like a community, feel like they're not alone.
Yeah, they understand themselves. They understand that there's a part of them that isn't different from everyone else in a way that's bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I do like this. I do think it's absolutely hysterical, and I don't think they're going to follow up on it. But if they do, I would like it.
If they do, I hope so. Yeah, that'd be great.
I'd like to watch that. I'd like to watch Archie discover that the reason that he wasn't really into Betty or Veronica is because maybe he's into dudes.
There it is. I've been waiting.
Because at the very least, Archie is homoromantic.
Ross's endgame is on its way.
I trust no one now. I trust no one after what they did to Veronica.
Mm-hmm.
The next day at school, Reggie and Archie confront Julian about giving them a gay movie. He says his bad. He thought they were in love, but he gives them their $2 back. I mean, okay.
He's like, oh, sorry. I thought you guys were in love. I thought maybe I would just, like, rush it along a little bit. Sorry, guys. This might be.
You absolute liar. If you genuinely thought that they were into each other, you would have outed them.
Oh, absolutely. You would have punched them both in the head. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, I mean, homophobia, right?
Mm-hmm.
Reggie asks, does he still have Betty's sister's stag film, like, by any chance? Julian says that Betty took it, but he does have another. This one about a guy and two girls. He gives it to them for free, and they leave with their arms around each other. Julian's watching them, and he's like,
You know what? Archie is not helping the allegations. He shows up to Julian, and he goes, give us the money, or I will pound you.
Yeah.
I went, whoa, buddy, calm down.
Archie is never beating the bisexual allegations.
No, not ever.
Archie could marry a woman, I would be like... And like, never kiss a man. I would be like, yeah, he's bisexual.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. At the next meeting of Grundy's writer's workshop, everyone discusses their thoughts on Howl. Clay immediately takes the lead, shocking, and says a bunch of words that Archie doesn't know. Grundy asks him his thoughts, and he says he actually couldn't sleep after reading it because he wondered where the poet's ideas even came from. Grundy says that Alan lived a very interesting life and adds that her husband says that you can't be a real poet without really living. This stresses Archie out, and he says if that's the case, he'll never be able to write anything like this because he's a square. Clay says that maybe it's more about keeping an open mind about things, trying things with different people or more than one person. It's all a thinly veiled, well, I've never f***ed before, so how can I write anything?
Exactly. I've never written anything in my life.
I can't write anything worthwhile because I've never had sex. All right, then. Grundy asks him if he's ever stayed up all night talking with his friends to watch the sunrise. She says she and her husband do it at least once a month and calls it transcendent. She asks Betty what her thoughts are and asks if she liked how it wasn't afraid to ask the difficult questions.
Clay sure is saying a lot, a lot here. And the only other thing, well, first of all, I'm just like, okay, Grundy, we get that you have a husband. We get it. Like, she talks about him a lot. But also, I sort of felt bad for Betty because she was like, Betty, what's your opinion? And Betty was like, oh, and then Grundy was just like, is your opinion this, 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 and this?
Right?
And I was like, can I say what I thought? You asked me what I thought, and then you, okay. I'm just like, please, can someone let Betty talk? Grundy, you're not being a girl's girl. Let the girl talk.
And, like, the crazy part is, this would have been another great place for Betty to discuss how open she is about sexuality, yes, and her own queer feelings, but instead, mm-hmm, I guess we're just not allowing her to have that anymore.
Right. There's, like, that one crumb where she's like, hey, good for them. Sounds like my party.
Exactly.
But that's it. Yeah.
And I also think that we also didn't get to explore the fact that because they're reading from a male perspective,
yes,
and Betty has always very much been, I want to hear the female voice, that it might hit a little different for her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But Grundy was like, oh, well, here's how you feel about it. And I'm like, oh, all
right. Here's my opinion, so you must have the same opinion as me, right?
Apparently. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Archie and Reggie set up the projector to watch their new and straighter movie. There's two.
Yeah, I don't know.
It starts with two women in a kitchen and a man walking in. Do you think this looked like the Cooper House?
It's possible. I think it was very 50s.
It looked like the Cooper House to me, and I was like, that's funny.
Oh, if it, like, that actual set?
Yes.
Oh, I missed that. I have to go back and look.
I mean, it's possible. I could be completely wrong, but I know they have no money to make the show.
Right.
So it starts to get steamy when the film reel burns. They both scream and are still horny as heck. They don't know what they're supposed to do.
That's an actual line.
But then Archie gets an idea.
Literally, they're like, let's watch this movie about two girls and a guy. And then next scene, they're just like, guess we'll do two guys and a girl instead.
That's the same math.
Oh, boy.
I'm sorry, but, like, the way these actors handle this is so funny to me because I would not be able to get through it, first of all.
Mm-mm.
There's no way I am able to deliver these lines, but there's a point where Reggie literally says, I'm horny as heck. And Archie looks down at his own boner.
He goes, me too, man.
And says, me too. And I was like, how are you all doing this sober?
Because there were no rewrites. Like, whoever wrote this was just like, here's what I wrote. And everyone was like, yep, good. Move on.
But it's also like classic Riverdale, you know?
Yeah.
They're going to do these deeply awkward things. And the actors just somehow go with it. And I don't really understand it, but I'm happy for them, I guess.
In the movie, the girl like bends down and like takes, I don't know, like muffins or something out of the oven. And I thought this was sort of like a really subtle joke because she wasn't wearing oven mitts at all.
Oh my god.
So it was like so deeply fake. Like, we already know that it's fake, obviously. But like, it was just very funny to me that she was just like, la 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 la, oh, my muffins are done. Yummy. But they clearly were not baking at all.
That's actually a great little like porno.
Yeah, it was so funny.
Joke. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Archie and Reggie go to Twyla Twist Motel to smash with her. She asks which one of them is coming in first or if they're coming in together. Both of them stand up and walk in. Okay, again, these are teenagers, just so we're clear.
She also calls them, she also says, which one of you Wisconsin man cheese is gonna come in? I said, I'm sorry, man cheese.
Well.
Please don't say things like this. Please don't. And I was like, oh yeah, haha, that's a funny joke. And then they stand up and they go in and they do it.
Oh, like, well?
And I was like, okay.
They definitely... Well, Archie and Reggie have now had sex with each other. And we could not have asked for anything more.
At least adjacent.
I definitely.
Like, I'm just like, oh my god. Okay, guys, sure.
Yeah, I mean, we got what we wanted, but not the way that we wanted it.
Not the way that we thought.
No, but it's Riverdale, so that's kind of par for the course.
I don't even want to think about what happened in that room.
I was going to say I'm not going to be mad about it, but I'm like a little mad about it. So Reggie and Archie watch the sunrise together. They note that it does look different now and agrees that they've expanded their horizons. They lost their virginities. Whoa. So, you know, the world looks different. It feels like anything is possible. Archie tells Reggie that he loves him and Reggie reciprocates. I can't tell if this is meant to be a no homo or not, but I'm going to pretend that it's not for my own satisfaction.
Okay, so this is my opinion. First of all, Grundy literally was like, this is a romantic thing I do with my husband. And Archie was like, I'm gonna do this romantic thing with my buddy Reggie.
Yep.
But they, like, I don't know if this was a choice that KJ made or something, but it took him so long to say I love you. And then he also had, like, this weird look of, like, I don't even know what it was, but...
That's longing, bud.
Like,
it's longing.
So here's what I think, is that, like, it's literally Archie being like, I love you. And he said it so tenderly. And then Reggie turned around and said, love you too, bud. I really feel like, you know.
Well, one was homo and one was no homo.
I do think so. But I also don't think it was Reggie going, I love you too, friend.
Yeah.
Archie.
I think it might have just been more casual.
Right? It was just him being like, hey, I love you too. I think that for Reggie, it was a friend love. And we just did a fun thing together. And for Archie, it was like, I love you now. Love.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally Archie being like, I'm queer. And it's Reggie being like, that was fun, man, lol.
Which is, again, brings me back to, like, my concern about how bisexuality is portrayed.
Yeah, yeah.
But I agree that I definitely think, at the very least, that this does confirm that Archie does have queer leanings. And I think it's fair to say that it was longing when he looked at Reggie, because it does look like, you know, smitten. It's smitten.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that was a storyline in a Riverdale episode. It happened, and wow.
Yeah. I liked parts of it, and I didn't like other parts of it, but at the end of the day, we got bisexual Archie, and I can't be mad. Too mad, anyway.
Yeah. So, our last storyline here is going to be Betty. Kevin and Clay are about to leave the movie theater with a projector when they run into Veronica. She thinks they're using it for one of their wrestling movies and says they're free to watch them here as long as they clean up afterwards. They explain that they're actually lending it to Julian so they can all watch a stag film at his house. What is happening at Thornhill?
Literally, Julian is watching porn at their house. But Cheryl's in trouble for being gay.
Yeah. Veronica's into this. She says she's never seen one because they're usually shown by men in their creepy clubs, but she's curious about them. She tells the boys to tell Julian that he and his friends can screen the film here, but she gets to come too and invite Betty.
Now, this part I do like.
In the blurb of this episode, it says Veronica sets up a thing for Julian to do this. And I simply was like, that's not true.
That's not what happened.
I do not see Veronica doing that. But having seen the context of it, it makes more sense to me now.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I guess I sort of thought that it was going to be a more, like in season four, that the videos that Brett have were, like, against consent. Like, it was not, it was more of, like, an amateur thing that, like, maybe was a revenge porn type thing. But now that I see that it's sort of, like, it's just sex workers consenting adults starring in these films.
Yeah, it's just a porno.
That makes way more sense. Yeah. That makes way more sense to me.
It's just a classic porno, and it's like, okay, well, then that's fine. And I do think it's realistic for Veronica to want to watch it in a way that is accessible to her.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that made sense to me. And of course, she was like, I'm gonna bring a gal pal. And I was like, first of all, gal pal, very funny. And then also, of course, it's Betty.
That's why I was so confused, because she asks Betty to watch a porno, and then they don't discuss, like, the fact that, like, they're watching porn together and that they have feelings for each other. And I'm like, what are you doing?
Right. And it's like, it's weird because Polly also, like, I guess she consented to be in the film, but then eventually she made it so that she did not actually want it out there, and she was trying to get rid of it, right?
Yeah.
So it's like,
well, this is,
it still feels icky.
That's a very classic, like, porn, like, issue, which is basically you get manipulated into doing it and you get misled. Yeah. And then, of course, later you're like, holy shit, I cannot believe that happened and I don't want that out there, but it's too late because you've already been tricked.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Lastly, Veronica calls them the Bobbsey twins. The Bobbsey twins are the principal characters of what was, for 75 years, the Strait-Meyer Syndicate's longest-running series of American children's novels, written under the pseudonym Laura Lee Hope. The books related the adventures of the children of the upper middle-class Bobbsey family, which included two sets of fraternal twins, Bert and Nan, who were 12, and Flossie and Freddie, who were 6. So, the Bobbsey twins.
I thought this was super cute, because it's what my grandpa always called my sister and I.
Oh, that is cute. I love that.
I've heard that my whole life.
Betty arrives late to the private screening at the Babylonium. Ronnie says she knew Betty would be interested in these, and Betty agrees. She's been curious about stag films ever since reading about them in the sex book. Veronica says the boys are waiting for them in the theater. We drop Alice and her sleeping pills again. I worry about her.
Yeah, I think Alice keeping herself repressed is going to, like, kill her or something. Like, not really, but, you know?
Yeah. So Veronica welcomes everyone, introduces the premiere of The Wedding Night. They all sit down to watch, and everyone's excited, but Betty screams to stop the movie when she sees who the lead actress is. It's her sister Polly. We were talking about this last storyline, but I was like, please space out. Why are you all sitting so close to each other? Because everyone's just getting boners beside each other. That's weird.
Apparently.
Stop it!
And then they all have to, like, pretend that's not happening, and oh, that's beautifully awkward.
Yeah, oh my god. Ew, I'm so embarrassed. I'm so embarrassed for them. Betty sits in Veronica's office after the non-screening. Ronnie fixes her a drink and asks when the last time she saw Polly was, and Betty says a couple years ago. Betty says this doesn't make sense because Polly is a dancer on Broadway. Ronnie says maybe she should call her and get some answers. The timeline is weird.
Yeah, she's a dancer on Broadway.
The timeline is weird between the sisters here, because I think Polly was only supposed to be 1 year older than Betty in the original timeline, unless she was older than Jason, because Jason and Cheryl were supposed to be 1 year older. They've obviously changed that now. It's eventually just sort of become...
Everyone's the same age, yeah.
Meshed together and everything. But originally, Jason and Cheryl were in the same grade as Polly, which was supposed to be 1 year older. So... either Polly is still 1 year older than Betty and she just, like, left early. But I think Betty's only 16, so she'd only be 17. So it really feels like, I mean, she's been gone for a long time. She's engaged. Like, I think that just in this timeline, somehow, Polly is, like, quite a few more years older than Betty.
Yeah, I think Polly's in her 20s.
Yeah, I agree. It's just weird because it's different than what it was in the original story. In the middle of the night, after her parents have gone to bed, Betty calls Polly and she says they need to talk. The next day, Betty tells Veronica that she and Polly talked quickly last night and now she's on her way to visit Riverdale. They're going to meet at Pop so she can explain what's been going on, but she doesn't do adult films anymore. You know, because they love to have private conversations at Pop's. That's sort of their thing.
Yeah, sure. No one's going to hear that.
Yeah. Veronica asks if that's because she's on Broadway, and Betty says that's her cover story and Polly's actually a burlesque dancer. Apparently, Alice and Hal know this,
but she didn't tell them that Polly is visiting. Ronnie says burlesque is a legit art form and name drops Gypsy Rose Lee and Josephine Baker. Betty says Polly's stage name is Polyamorous, and Veronica immediately recognizes it. She's apparently super famous for this. Ronnie adds that she would die to have Polly perform her burlesque at the Babylonium, and also maybe this is why Alice has been such a freak all season.
I kind of like this twist a lot.
Totally tracks that Veronica loves burlesque. That makes total sense to me.
Yeah, because she's f***ing gay.
Yeah.
But I also really love that Polly's reclamation of agency from who she was in the main timeline, which is like a runaway, and she ends up being a sex worker, like, and just all of these things were very dicey in terms of like misogyny and consent have been sort of fixed here.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. Because in the original timeline, she literally like was a sex worker and then got murdered.
Yeah. So it was like all of the most misogynist tropes. And, you know, it wasn't a sex worker because, you know, it was a respect for sex workers kind of discussion that was happening on Riverdale. Yeah. It was, we need her to be an easily exploitable person to get her murdered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Sort of thing. And like, it was not respectful. It was disrespectful to sex workers. Like, it was crazy. So I just really love the, like, Polly was basically like, I am so unashamed of who I am. And also, I love doing burlesque and all of these things, and I make a living at it, and I'm good at it. I just think it's really nice.
Right, and she says, like, you know, she's engaged and everything, too, so, like, all of it ended up working out for her, which is lovely. Mm-hmm. The fact that she gave the name of her fiancé freaked me out. I mean, I only have 4 episodes left in the whole show, but when, like, side character that we don't even see gets a name like that, I expect to get a name drop later to where it turns out he's, like, bad or something.
What was the name?
You know, like, some mob boss, Langley Huggles.
All right.
I really feel like it sort of got the vibe that, like, later at some point someone was going to be like, yeah, and the where I get my drugs is Huggles, Langley Huggles, you know? And then we were going to be like, oh, that's Polly's fiancé.
I mean,
if we didn't have 4 episodes left, I feel like they'd do something like that.
But at some point we know that Charles comes back, correct?
I don't think we know that.
What? Didn't you say that we got a Charles mention about...
No. I just hope.
About Alice's dark secret?
No, she has said that she has a secret in it. Oh, yes. So basically in like 2 episodes from now, it says there's like a family revelation for the Coopers. And I'm like, oh my God, it's Charles. But everyone on Twitter is like, it's that Hal's a serial killer. And I'm like, please, can I have something?
Oh. Because I was going to say, wouldn't it be absolutely the most Charles thing to be Huggles?
Oh my God.
Am I wrong?
And then they're half siblings?
Am I wrong?
Because Polly, you know, marries and has children with her cousin. She's like half brother this time.
See? And she may not even know it.
Oh no. Oh my God. I would lose my mind. I would lose it.
If I'm right, I am going to be insufferable.
Brittany, if you're right, I'll send you $50.
That's really funny. Not necessary, but...
No, but that's how much I want it.
Let's manifest it.
Yeah, I will literally send you $50. I'd be thrilled too.
Actually, I don't want to see like Polly hurt like that, but at the same time, I'm like, ah, oh, but right. The drama.
But the drama. Yeah. And we get to see Charles, which means that snake parents happened at all in this timeline. Like,
exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, so her name is Polyamorous, which is very funny. In the trailer, it got cut off, like the poster got cut off, so I thought it was Polyamore, which I thought was a great burlesque name or like a great like stage name.
Mm-hmm.
But Polyamorous, so much funnier. However, Dave brought up in the Discord that Polyamorous as a term wasn't even coined until 1992. So like, I love the idea that the writers were just like, how about Polyamorous? That would be funny, haha. When in reality, in the actual canon of the show, she was just like, Amorous as a last name. That makes sense. And it's like a little fun pun that was an accident.
Oh my God, that makes it so much dumber. Yeah. That makes it so much dumber. I love it.
Uh-huh. Because that, like, she did not...
I love that these writers don't do a shred of research.
She did not make it Polyamorous as a joke about polyamory. She didn't. No. She couldn't have. I mean, I guess they're getting musical numbers from the 90s, so who knows, but...
So that wasn't a word until the 90s?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
Yeah.
Thank you for that education, Dave. That's hysterical.
At Pobbs, Polly and Betty meet for lunch. Betty gives her the copy of her movie, and she says she tried to track down all the copies, but she must have missed some. She explains that she was tricked into filming it when she first got to New York because of some jerk she was dating. Betty asks how she got into burlesque. Polly says she originally auditioned for the Rockettes, but she wasn't tall enough. But soon afterwards, she saw Gypsy Rose Lee perform and was inspired by her. She says not to worry because she's proud of her career. She has a steady income and people respect her. Betty tells Polly about her peep show with Archie and then asks how much their parents know about her life. Polly says they know about her burlesque career. She invited them to see her show a few years ago, but they walked out in the first 5 minutes. Alice started telling people that she was starring in Guys and Dolls instead. Polly says they're not in each other's lives anymore, but reiterates that she's here for Betty. She suggests that they do something fun tonight, and Betty asks her if she'll meet her friend Veronica, who is such a big fan. Polly is excited that one of her fans lives in town and says absolutely.
There's something very gay in Veronica being a big fan and wanting to meet her, and the fact that they don't acknowledge it hurts my heart.
I did, however, want to say that this is the most Betty and Polly have seemed like sisters in this entire show.
Yeah.
The most I've believed it.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Like, especially when she was just like, I did this thing with Archie, and she's like, Archie from next door?
Right?
Because they grew up there.
It's definitely two sisters gossiping.
Yeah, it was great. And I did also think that Polly finally looks older than Betty. I always felt like they sort of looked like the same age, if not, Betty looked older than Polly.
I agree.
Like, Polly finally looks older than Betty, I felt like.
I really like this. I also really like that because Polly is not in a constant state of victimhood, it does totally change their dynamic for the better.
Yeah.
Because it's not Betty trying to rescue Polly. Now it's Polly sort of rescuing Betty.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really wholesome.
Yeah. And especially like both of us as older sisters, that feels important to me.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Yeah.
Because it was hard watching Polly always lose.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know. Like, first of all, she's with her cousin. Then she's teen pregnancy. Then she's
locked up at the Sisters of Quiet Mercy.
Locked up at the Sisters. Then she gets taken in by the freaking farm. Then they do a time jump, and then she's a sex worker, which is fine, but she's not happy about it, though.
No.
It doesn't give her agency. And then she gets freaking murdered.
Yeah. Polly,
she doesn't get anything good.
Polly never had any agency as a character, and I really appreciate this little side quest to give her that. I think it's really nice.
Yeah, I agree.
And I also like that it serves as a dual thing to reassure in Betty that her own curiosity about sex and sexuality and sensuality
is normal.
It's totally normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I love that.
Which, again, this is the kind of messaging where I'm like, oh, this is great for teenagers to see.
Yeah.
It's totally normal.
Mm-hmm. I also wanted to say that Julian is going to probably have to, like, pay Brett for losing one of his films. Brett's going to be pissed.
For sure. Yep, yep, yep. Brett's going to be like, which one did you lose? The good one!
He's like, please tell me you lost the wrestling one. I didn't actually care about that one. Brett's like, oh yeah, I didn't even care about that one, actually. So, like...
Bad news.
I hope that you got rid of the wrestling one. It's not my favorite.
Yeah. Do you mind if I, like, keep it, though?
Yeah. Betty brings Polly to the Pembroke to meet Veronica, who's thrilled and asks about all the cities she's been to. Polly says she's going on an all-expenses-paid first-class European tour. She also reveals that she's engaged to a man named Langley Huggles, who's a stockbroker that she's already living with. Betty is surprised and asks if she was going to be invited to her wedding. Polly says yes, and actually she'd like Betty to be her maid of honor. Veronica asks Polly if she'll do her burlesque show at the Babylonium and brainstorms that it can be a girls-only event. Betty thinks she can convince Alice to come too, but Polly isn't so sure.
Veronica, that's a real gay idea.
Here's the thing. I would go to that, though.
100%. Female-only like, audience?
That sounds fun.
That's a safe space right there.
Yeah. Like, burlesque when you're... Like Veronica said earlier, she was just like, stag films are in, like, creepy clubs with a bunch of gross men inside. You know? Like, it's like...
And you know, like, when they're there, they're not there for the art form. They're there to be exploitive.
When you show up to, like, a burlesque show that is, like, only people who are, like, supportive, then it's like, instead of, you know, when you hear men whistle at women, you're just like, this is gross. When women whistle at women, we are supporting you.
Exactly. It's a different...
We think you're doing a great job.
It's a different gaze.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, not all... We can't paint all of us with the same brush. However...
It's so true.
In this show, it's very clear that it's like... And I think in society, it's just... It's different.
Right. Exactly, yeah. And of course, like, you know, we're talking about the 50s and everything. Like, there are obviously people who don't fit the binary and stuff like that. So, but yeah.
But in general... I would 100%, a female-only performance with only a female audience where you don't have to worry about feeling grossed out at the people around you.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine being in a comfortable environment.
Wow.
Yeah.
Veronica calls her living room humble. My humble living room. I said, I don't know if that's true. I don't think so, dude.
She's like, I think you're richer than I am now.
Yeah, actually. She's engaged to Langley Huggles. I don't know where Huggles came from, but I think Langley is probably named after the suburb of Vancouver that they shoot a lot in.
I also think that that was the case.
Yeah, yeah. And then I just thought it was interesting that the stag film was called The Wedding Night. And then it turns out that Polly is actually getting married.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
I'm like, who are you? I need to know this man.
Yeah, exactly. I know. It's so foreboding, I feel like.
Yes. But it's Riverdale, so it could just go absolutely nowhere.
Yeah. Blanche also wrote, what happens with Juniper and Dagwood at the end of this season if we're, like, never going back to present day? I'm like, they just don't exist.
They're dead.
I don't know what happens.
Should I tell my sister to name, this is not related to them being dead, I just think it's funny, that she should definitely name her twins Juniper and Dagwood.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
Like,
for the two boys, right?
Yep.
Dagwood.
Still Juniper.
And, yeah, Juniper, sure, yep. Whatever. Veronica makes an announcement in the locker room and tells everyone that Polly is performing a burlesque number at the Babylonium. No one except Veronica even knows who polyamorous is, but everyone seems interested regardless. Tony says it's her kind of night, and I'm just like, I feel like Tony should know about polyamorous if Veronica does.
Oh my god, yes.
But of course, Veronica, of course, has had, like, access to a television and is super rich and everything. Yeah. She probably can afford to be more worldly and see more things than everybody else.
Yeah. Plus, Tony's very much a written word kind of girly.
That is true.
Yeah.
I feel like Veronica is, like, doing the gay agenda here because I feel like it's everyone's mission to make everyone gay on this show. Like, Julian was just like, hey, Archie and Reggie, I got you.
Hey, you guys are in love, right? I'll help you out.
Yeah. Yeah. While me and Meta were watching, we were just like, where's Evelyn's invite? Why doesn't Evelyn get invited?
Evelyn's not invited. She's a freaking homophobe.
We just think it would be funny to see her there and have her be like, harumph.
Oh my god, she'd be so scandalized. She doesn't deserve it.
Blanche also said, not sure why I've never noticed this before, but are these their gym uniforms? They look insanely stiff and uncomfortable. I don't know if these are different than they usually wear, but they definitely have been wearing uniforms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh god, I remember gym uniforms. Oh, I hated them.
Dude, when I tell you, we had to change for gym class every single day in middle school, like, or every gym class,
of
right?
Of course.
I work in a middle school now. Mm-hmm. And they don't even make the kids change anymore.
What?
Yeah, like, it's, like, part of your grade, but you don't have to. Like, they just pay attention to who does, and then you get a higher mark if you do, but they don't make anybody.
I wonder if that's about income inequality.
It's possible.
That is, because, like, when I was in school, it was a whole, you're changing your gym clothes, and also I'm going to be keeping an eye on your hygiene, and if any of you stink, I will not be above telling you that.
Yeah, well, that's the problem, is that, like, they're in middle school, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that was when I was in middle school, and my gym teacher was a lesbian, so she was very unafraid of the boys.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, like, we had to wear our gym clothes.
Yeah.
And they had to be washed regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in Catholic school, we had to wear Catholic school gym clothes.
Oh, no.
Oh, bro, it was not good. They were uniforms.
Betty comes home and invites Alice to Polly's performance that night. Alice is surprised that she's in town. Betty asks if she was ever going to tell her about Polly's career, and she says no. Betty asks if this is why she's been so up her ass all season, because she doesn't want her to end up like Polly. She says Polly is living her life without them, and asks if she knew that she's engaged. She begs Alice to come to the show, because this is the only chance they have to be a family again, and Alice is still not into this idea.
Okay, I have thoughts. Okay. My first thought is that Alice is a great example of what happens when you cast your children out and don't accept them as they are.
Mm-hmm.
You face the consequences, and that's, you get cut out. And as you should be, because denying your children their identity is, and basically trying to keep them under lock and key, does nothing but make them resent you more, which I wish more parents understood, and I wish that society understood. Just because you don't want your kids to be a certain way doesn't mean that you can stop them from being that way.
Yeah.
However, I also think that it's fascinating that the implication is very much that Polly is living the life that Alice kind of wants to have.
Right. Alice said last episode that she, like, wanted to be a stewardess and travel the world. And then we hear that Polly's going on a European tour.
Yep. And Alice, the thing that stopped Alice was fear.
Yep.
And that stops a lot of women from doing that. And it also causes them to uphold toxic patriarchal ideas, because if they didn't get to do it, that means that it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was fascinating. But I also really like that there is a reason that Alice has been so awful, because for a lot of this show, when Alice would act horribly, you wouldn't get the reason at all.
Right, that's just because that's who she is.
Exactly.
It's like, that can't be true, but okay.
And I mean, it does ring true from, like, that, remember that therapy session that she and Betty went to, where she was like, yes, I'm just so afraid of losing her?
Yeah.
And that was, like, a really emotionally raw moment that, of course, we never revisited again, but...
Yeah.
I like part of this.
I have a hard time because, like, Machen did that interview where she said, like, oh yeah, it's all good, like, Alice ends up happy and she, you know, has her partner and she's happy and everything, and I'm like, I just have a hard time believing Machen showed up to set and read these scripts and was like, great!
I mean...
This tracks for Alice.
The thing that could end up rescuing it is if we find out, and I wouldn't be surprised, that Alice is in a deeply abusive relationship.
Yeah.
And that she's being punished for Polly's choices.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, these are also things that she's having a hard time coming to terms with Betty.
Yeah. Well, Blanche also has like, the prediction that she knows that Hal's a serial killer and he's, like, abusing her to keep her quiet.
Yeah. Or that she basically can't do anything about it, or... because she knows she'll get killed.
Yeah, yeah.
Which would also make sense, but also sucks.
Yeah.
In a huge way, but I mean, I guess we'll see.
Yeah. The only other thing I had about this was that, like, Betty's like, were you gonna tell me what Polly's doing? And she's like, no. And I'm like, if Polly's world famous, like, Betty would have figured it out eventually.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, we could have just been honest, but
okay. One discussion with Veronica would have had
right,
that.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the Babylonium, Veronica introduces Polly to the crowd. Polly sings Rose's Turn from the musical Gypsy. Betty watches and fantasizes about what it would be like if she was performing burlesque. We cut to Alice looking at old ads for Polly's show and wondering where she went wrong. So this is interesting because we've talked about Gypsy Rose Lee and, you know, Polly said that she sort of, like, looked up to her, like, saw her, and that was the reason why she started doing burlesque,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then this musical that she's got a song from is a song, or, like, is a musical about Gypsy Rose Lee.
And also, of course, we here at the Aficionados do know that that is a slur.
Yes, of course.
Now. If it's offensive to even say it, let us know. We mm-hmm. are uneducated on this topic, but these are these people's names. So
names and the name of the musical.
Yeah.
I am sorry though.
But I just thought I would point that out in case anyone was like, I'll be like, we know.
Yeah.
Feel free to send in information to correct us.
Yes. Thank you. I would do appreciate that.
Yeah.
And then also, so the musical came out in 1959. So it's another future telling number because it's still supposed to be 1955. I mean, you know, we saw Halloween.
Not as egregious.
We saw Halloween happen, but we never saw Christmas happen. So I don't know if it's 1956 now or if we're still in 1955. I don't know.
Because we haven't had Thanksgiving or anything.
No, so I have no idea what time of year it is right now.
All right.
But it was cold for a little bit there, but it's not, there's no snow on the ground or anything. I don't know.
There's no snow on the ground because they shot this 2 months ago. it was like June.
We were talking about how sad we were that Midge is missing this. I feel like Midge would just love this.
Midge? Oh my god. Midge has a future as a burlesque dancer. I know it.
Yeah. I am so sad that she had to miss it. I knew it was Lily, because in the trailer I was just like, it says Polly, but I was like, if that's not Lily, then this casting was 10 times better than I ever thought it was. But it was Lily, so we're good.
I loved the continuation of this as, like, Betty always exploring that side of herself, which, without having the it's dark Betty stupidity.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing, is that, like, I saw, one of the notes that I wrote down was that I'm so glad that they made this aspirational.
Yes.
You know, like, Betty has been so, all of her fantasies are so sexualized, and I was like, it's so good that they made this so clear that it was aspirational.
Yeah.
And I thought that was great.
Well, when you take the stigma off of it, really beautiful things can happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a song, like, sort of about her mom.
Exactly.
Too.
I think it's very funny that in the middle of this, it turned into a musical.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Just one song.
Yeah.
So Rose's Turn is a song from that musical that we've been talking about. It has been performed by such actresses as Bette Midler, Ethel Merman, Angela Lansbury.
That's why I knew that song. I couldn't figure out why I knew this song, but I had a Bette Midler phase as a child.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes a lot of sense now.
Yeah. Patti LuPone, Bernadette Peters, and Imelda Staunton. Umbridge herself!
Bernadette Peters is crazy hot.
The song is often regarded as the pinnacle of the 11 o'clock number. The song occurs at the point when Mama Rose realizes the frustrations of having little to show for the sacrifices that have left her with two seemingly ungrateful children. At this point in the show, Mama Rose is a character whose dreams were too strong and whose heart held her own feelings hostage to make those dreams come true. She finally drops her facade and admits her frustration and despair. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette argues that the unmasking of her psyche takes place during this song.
Oh, yeah.
I know the song because Kurt absolutely bodies it on Glee.
I don't want to hear from you ever again.
But I wanted to... He does a pretty good job.
You need to leave. I do not ever want to hear Kurt absolutely bodies this on Glee. I hate you.
The amount of times that I listen to Kurt's version of Defying Gravity is, like, upsetting, I gotta say.
Oh my god, I don't know how to talk to you. Having said that, I also, like a Virgin is in my brain. Like, obviously it's a Madonna song, but the version that plays in my brain is the Glee song.
Guys, there are some songs. I'm not gonna say there's a lot of songs, but there are some songs where the Glee version was better.
And you know what?
I think that's true.
I think wisdom is knowing that that is true.
I'm not saying that those two Kurt songs that I talked about were. I'm just saying that there are some.
I completely agree.
I want to believe that this is another sign that Alice is going somewhere, but I just don't know.
I trust nothing and no one. I am Fox Muldering my way through the end of this season. I got played.
So Blanche said that the musical is about the life and backstory of real-life burlesque dancer Gypsy Rose Lee. I actually got to see it a couple months ago. The experience was very cool. I saw it in this vintage 50s-esque tiny theater.
Ooh.
I was not as interested at the time because I didn't know they'd be doing a river plot about it, but it also gave me a lot more insight into this episode. I won't go too into detail because I'm not sure how many other people are familiar with it, but I do think it's unfair to frame Alice as the same type of character as the mother in that story.
See, whereas I was thinking that sounded exactly like Alice in terms of, like, keeping herself repressed.
Yeah, I think that I agree in regards to the song, but I haven't seen the whole rest of the musical,
no,
so I can't comment on anything that happens, like, after that or before that.
I suspect that it's not pretty.
Yeah. After the show, Veronica and Betty praise Polly for how well her performance went. Ronnie questions how she didn't show any nudity. Polly explains that if you're good enough, you can suggest more than show.
Yep.
Betty apologizes for Alice's absence, but Polly isn't worried about it. She makes Betty promise that when she finds the thing she loves, she'll pursue it and not let anybody take it away, and they hug. Was lovely.
The thing you love is Veronica. Thank you.
Something that I meant to say earlier that I forgot about was that, like, I thought it was so interesting that Polly was like, Betty, will you be my maid of honor? And I'm like, that's nice. You know, like, I would want my sister to be my maid of honor, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But if you haven't seen her in several years, I'd be like, I don't know. I would just be like, I don't know.
Maid of honors had a lot less responsibility in those days. That was not so much a job as it is.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is true. I noticed that, like, you know, Polly and Mary seem to have the same message, which I love. And I'm really sorry that Polly got murdered in the other timeline, because I really like her in this timeline.
Yeah. I like that we got to spend time with her.
Not that I didn't like her, but I was sad.
As a liberated person.
Yeah. Blanche said, is Tiara in any more episodes? If not, that makes me so sad, because as annoying as Polly could be, she and Alice were finally in a good place at the end of last season, and she had just come back to life, and now they get this as an ending.
Yeah.
Which is, like, sad for Polly and Alice, but it's good for Betty and Polly, I gotta say.
That's true.
So, last scene. Here we go. Betty walks into the kitchen and tells Alice that Polly is on her way back to New York City, and she's super jealous that she has so much freedom and a career. Betty tells her to stop sabotaging their family and that she drove Polly away. Alice doesn't want to fight with her right now, but Betty keeps going. She says as soon as she gets out of high school, she's leaving and going no contact, and after last night, she wants to become a burlesque dancer too. She keeps pushing, and Alice slaps her. Betty doesn't react, except to say that she's surprised Alice hasn't hit her sooner.
The way Lily played this scene was chilling.
It was chilling. I saw a couple of people online, like on Tumblr and stuff, saying, I think Alice just slapped the serial killer jeans back into Betty.
Oh my god. I forgot about the stupid serial killer jeans.
And I was like, it kind of reads like that, doesn't it?
See, I read it as Betty trying to find any kind of fire in Alice.
Yeah, but she was just like, just care about something.
Yeah, care about something. And but like, now that we sort of have gotten on the Hal is a serial killer track, you then have to start to wonder if this was Alice, like, you know, the way she behaves is Alice's misguided way of trying to keep the girls safe by getting them the fuck out of Dodge.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah. She's like, if I can't get away, I need you to.
Yeah. So she's like, I'm going to push them away, over police them, mother hen them to death to make them hate me so that when they leave, they don't come back.
That tracks.
It could be just wishful thinking, and it probably will be.
I think the thing that just makes me so sad about this and, like, is just that, like, I'm so confused because last episode, Betty had a whole monologue at the end of the episode saying, Mom, I love you and I know you're a good person. And then the monologue at the end of this episode is this? And I'm just like, I'm not saying that either of them, like, I thought both of them, like, made sense. It's just, like, back to back, I'm just like, what happened here?
There's no consistency to these episodes. There is no...
Yeah.
There's no continuity. There is nothing tying any of these episodes together. Whatever happens in one episode, that has no bearing on the next one. And, like, that's a crazy thing to do on the back five episodes of your show.
And I sort of thought, like, I mean... I believe that Cheryl got herself emancipated in the original timeline. And it sort of almost read to me that, like, Betty thought, okay, I finally got my mom to, like, hit me. And now I have, like, evidence or something, you know, that she's just, like, was trying to get emancipated or something like that. Like,
that wouldn't work.
Yeah. Like, that sort of, like, the fact that she sort of smiled after she got slapped felt like she walked in there to get hit.
But that doesn't make any sense because parents hitting their kids in the 50s would not be anything to write home about.
Yeah, I'm giving too much credit. I
always want more from this show.
Just try to make it make sense, but yeah. It just doesn't sometimes.
It's not going to make sense, which sucks.
I just wrote down I like their dresses. I think they look nice, even if sad things are happening. And Blanche wrote, I hate it here.
Yeah, I feel like at this point, like, we're supposed to see Alice as irredeemable. And I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm.
But last episode, you were trying to redeem her.
Exactly. That's why I'm so confused.
Like, what? I'm just like, and like, so where's is Ethel off doing her Hollywood screen test and that's why she's not here? Like, what is...
There's no continuity.
It just completely erases everything she just did. Yeah. Like...
There's no continuity.
Yeah. Anyway, shall we go into segments?
Yes.
All right. So our first segment is, what did Blanche think? Blanche sent us in a voicemail, and here it is.
Hey, it's Blanche. I'm going to real quickly tell you guys my thoughts about each storyline, and I'm not sure why I didn't do this from the beginning, but oh well, here we are. So first of all, I'm sad about Betty and Alice. I think they backtracked so much from last episode, and I'm mad about it. For Shoni, I am concerned about what Cheryl's gonna do next. I hope she doesn't do anything stupid. Jughead's plot, I'm not too crazy about this season, but I'm hoping that once they bring Tabitha back, that it will turn around and have a happy ending. And congrats on Reggie and Archie on your gay awakenings, Kings! Okay, that's all. Just wanted to share that with you guys. Okay, love you, bye!
Thanks, Blanche. You're my hero.
So true.
Which character needs a hug the most? I'm thinking about all the storylines. There's a lot of storylines going on. Hold on.
Maybe Jughead?
I actually think I'm gonna give it to Polly.
Oh, that's a good one.
I think I'm gonna give it to Polly.
All right, fair enough.
Because sad things happened to her, but she has... grown from them and everything's better now, and I want her to I'm gonna hug Polly.
I like it. And my segment is, which MILF was the most badass? Polly was a mom in the other timeline, so Polly.
Got it.
Yeah.
What is Sam shipping the most?
I did not find out, so I'm just gonna say that she said Shoni.
That makes total sense. Yeah. Perfect.
Or Archie and Reggie.
Great.
What?
She
says everybody gay.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Asexual Jughead? ? The answer is yes, always yes. I don't care. Even though they tried to take it back again for some reason, I don't know. Whatever.
It's my opinion that that's how Cole's playing it, and I will die on that hill.
Yep. Oh, he is. Absolutely. Like, Cole, one of the things that listen, Cole's made mistakes, and we all know that. But.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
At the beginning of the show, he, like, talked about how he did the research and everything. Like, he was ready to play it like that, and the CW stopped him, you know? So, like, I believe that Cole is playing it like that, and he's just doing what the script says.
I agree.
Now it's time for our best line award. My best line award goes to Julian, Archie, and Reggie for...
This time I'll lend it to you gratis.
What does that mean?
It's free.
I love that Reggie knew.
Archie just doesn't know words, I think.
Yeah.
Bless his heart.
But can pronounce heteronormativity.
And wants to be a poet, so he'll learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he'll figure it out.
And mine goes to Archie and Reggie for...
I don't know, but we should probably turn this off, right? I mean, yeah.
Yeah, we probably should.
Like, when you guys are just, like, silly jokey probably. Watching porn, but, like, just as a joke, yeah. Right?
Just as a joke, right?
Just, like, as a joke? Just totally. Just as a bit.
Yeah. And Blanche's goes to Featherhead and Jughead for...
Shouldn't you be in class?
It's my lunch period, sir.
He just doesn't know.
Pay attention. You're the principal.
He literally doesn't know how to run his own school.
Now for the trailer. So the blurb for next episode is, taking the town by storm. Betty enlists help from Cheryl and Tony after deciding she's going to publish her own book. Veronica, Kevin, and Clay host Hollywood movie star Josie McCoy, who is in town to screen her latest film. Finally, Archie's attempt to take his poetry to the next level doesn't go as planned.
Oh, no.
Ooh, this whole trailer is about Josie, but I'm very excited about the Betty and the Archie storyline.
We deserved to have one Josie return.
It's true. And so they said, here you go.
And I said, thank you.
So we see a fancy car pulling up. We see Clay in his Babylonian uniform. He says, you're not gonna believe who's here. We see Josie's legs walking out of the car, her turning around. Veronica with Kevin and Clay behind her. She says, Ms. Josie McCoy. We see Josie performing, silhouetted. Josie says to Veronica in her office, I want a full red carpet premiere, all the bells and whistles. We see Josie putting her handprints into the concrete in front of the theater. Very cool.
Love that.
Also, Archie and Reggie are also in Babylonian uniforms in the background. I assume they're like hired security.
Oh my God.
But they're also teens.
I love that. That's so stupid.
They're just like teens, but I can totally see like that stereotypical scene happening where like they're in the background and then Josie goes, I want those two is my security, just because she thinks they're hot.
You know what? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I hope that.
There's also someone in the ticket booth, maybe Jughead, if I had to guess, but it's possible that it's not. It was kind of from far away. Josie said, my movie is in your hands, Veronica. We see Veronica smiling with a drink in her hand, the audience applauding in the theater. Veronica says to Josie, let's blow the roof off this joint. We see Josie singing. Looks like fun, I guess.
I think it's going to be great. I hope Tony and Josie get to speak.
Yeah. Ooh, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
I would love that. And Tabitha!
Yes!
That would be great. Ugh. Josie, Tabitha, and Tony as a trio was something that we were robbed of.
Yes.
Yes. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode.
Our music is Terminal by Good News Tunes.
And thank you to those who shared space with us while we recorded. My dog bumped my table several times trying to get comfortable. But I still thank him because he's just so cute.
So maybe he doesn't get a full thank you.
Yeah, but he's so cute. So it's okay.
My thank you is to my wife, our roommate Emily, and our cat.
Yay.
Thank you so much to Blanche for doing our beat by beat notes. I treasure you so much. And thank you for stepping in for me last week.
If you're a fan of The 100, you'd like to talk about that show too. We did seasons 4 to 7 as they were airing. No spoilers. And then we're going back to do the good old days. Season 3 is done. And then we're going to be doing season 2 and then season 1.
Good luck. If you're a fan of Stranger Things, we'd like to talk about that show too. We covered the first 3 seasons and we are doing 4 as soon as this is done.
Yes. If you're a fan of Lost, you'd like to talk about that show too. That is the only podcast that is ongoing as Riverdale is coming out. We are in the middle of season 4. It's our longest podcast, our most big brain podcast. We have guests over there and a spoiler section at the end. So if you want to watch along as you watch for the first time, oh boy, that would make me so happy.
Yes, that would be super cute. And it's Robin's favorite show.
Yes.
You can follow The Aficionados on Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, and our new TikTok.
Thanks. Our Patreon is patreon.com/TheAficionados. If you like what we do here, please consider donating. It's expensive with our money, but it's also expensive with our time. And so we'd really, really appreciate your help over there. If not, check out our small businesses or just recommend us to a friend because it's free.
Yeah. You can follow me on Twitter, which it's Twitter, at Britannia, yep. Which is Britannia with an underscore at the end.
And you can follow me personally at Robin E. Jeffrey pretty much everywhere. I'd really appreciate if you guys would go and check out those 2 links that I put in the description as well. That would be great. Our next episode is episode 717. It is called A Different Kind of Cat. I tried looking it up. I have absolutely no clue if this is named after a film or a TV show or something. I don't know.
Well, all right.
And I'm so sorry. I'll figure it out for next episode.
You're forgiven.
Okay, love you. Bye.
Okay, love you. Bye.